What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Spectora Spotlight. My name is Kevin Wagstaff, one of the owners and founders of Spectora. Today, we're joined by Glenn Fricke of DG Inspects. They are a multi-inspector company based out of the greater Tampa Bay, Florida area. Very experienced inspector, longtime Spectora user, so we're really excited to hear what he has to say about what he's done to find success, as well as what new inspectors can do to possibly get to where he's at. Hope you enjoy the interview. Thanks.
How's everything going? How's summer and busy season been for you?
It's definitely been busy. That's for sure. It's been one of the busier seasons on record for us. So haven't really had too many complaints this year. So shortage of manpower is the biggest complaint. So
is there ever a slow season in Florida? That's what I always wonder when talking to you guys.
You know what? There is. It typically falls over. Usually starts right around before Christmas and kind of lulls through January. January, probably not this past year, but January 2017, it was so quiet. I was starting to actually get extremely nervous because we would get like 8 or 10 inspections a week, maybe for what was at that time, like 3 inspectors. But it's the holiday season down here and kids are off school and it just is what it is. So,
yeah. So for those that don't know, tell us a little bit about your story and your journey to getting where you're at today, like how you got into business and then kind of what that growth has looked like.
Yeah, I think, like a lot of people, I started, wanting to get into this field. I was, when I moved to Florida, I began working for home insurance companies as an underwriter for them. Mm-hmm. And then we had the catastrophic hurricanes that came through in 2004 and 2005 that the company I was working for just basically ceased writing. I went to Travelers Insurance, which I think everybody's familiar with. And the same thing there, they ceased writing basically a year after I got there. So I was like, well, I'm kind of done with the Fortune 500 or, corporate deal. Mm-hmm. And so I went and got my contractor's license, had gotten that through the state and basically just set on my own with that. Had no business experience, knew absolutely nothing about business whatsoever.
Wow. And
at that point in time was right at the start of the real estate downfall. So we were doing a lot of work for Existed. I did remodeling. I had a partner helping me. We did some remodeling work, working for rental property owners, turning properties, painting, just redoing kitchens and stuff like that. So and then when the market got better, while it was down, I went and I actually took it was like a distance ed course. And I also did, international stuff on home inspections because it was kind of always one of my goals to get that license and certification.
Sure.
Well, it wasn't a license at the time here. It was just a certification. So luckily I had a bunch of friends that were realtors and kind of let me dabble in it, to kind of get the hang of it, so to speak, practice wise.
Yeah.
And then as the market started to improve, so did that end of things. And it basically got to the point in 2012 where, I kind of had to make the decision. I was either going to say, both ends of the market were starting to improve. So it was either I'm going to stay with, remodeling or I'm going to stay with inspections. And at the time, it seemed like that was the inspection side of things was the way to go. And that's panned out, probably true, from my perspective anyway. And then we just kind of started growing from there. You just kind of start getting so busy, you either have to turn away work or hire somebody. So you kind of have to make that decision, which way you're going to go. So we ended up hiring. And then, once you hire, it kind of grows onto itself. So we grew the company at one point. We had 4 total field inspectors. Now we lost due to attrition 2 relatively back to back. So we got really understaffed. So we've hired, and we've got one in training right now to kind of help with that. The onslaught of licensed inspectors in Florida has kind of eaten away a little bit into our volume, but it certainly hasn't hurt us, man. We're plenty busy for sure. So we got enough right now where we'll be able to, you know, satisfy three field inspectors and just go from there.
Nice. Nice. Well, yeah, thanks for digging into all that. So you talked about the decision between, we'll start going back, and the decision between staying in remodeling, building, traditional contracting versus home inspection. For any guys that are out there listening that are like making that decision, what were some of the factors that made you say, you know what, this home inspection thing seems more appealing?
Well, it's funny because now I'm at the point, and you know, I'm by no means saying I went completely out of the home inspection business, but I bought a lot last year that was literally right next door to my house. It was a vacant lot. it wasn't a vacant lot. It had like a 400 square foot shack on it that had been foreclosed on forever. So I ended up buying it from the bank. I smashed it to the ground and built a spec home from the ground up. I had never built, you know, a spec home before. And so learning that process was fun, and it also kind of proved to me to be easy, to the point where I just right now yesterday closed on two other lots to go back in and build spec homes on. So I'm doing that in my free time. So if that's another question down the road, what do you do in your free time? I guess I'm now building houses. But but for anybody that's, you know, trying to make the switch, I guess the issue for me was, I think the issue for me at the time was I didn't have a lot of business experience. So, you know, I think if I were to go back now and open a remodeling or contracting business, I'd know what I'd need to succeed. I'd need marketing. Right. I'd need an estimator. You know what I mean? I'd need some better subcontractors, and I could probably go back in and start a renovation construction business and be pretty darn successful at it. But, I guess the thing is do you want to swing a hammer, or do you want to swing a cellular phone all day, and a laptop all day? So I guess that's really the decision that you kind of have to make, as which one, and longevity too. You know, do you want to be, you know, doing trades work, you know, your whole life, or do you want to, you know, get into this? And, you know, it just, it kind of has to suit you and what you, my whole thing with building houses, I've kind of always been, even from a kid, like I built Legos and all that stuff. Just building was just building things really kind of gives me a personal sense of satisfaction. And it's cool to me to take just nothing and turn it into this, you know, giant house and make it beautiful and know that a family's going to move in there. And you know what I mean? Like that to me gives me a real sense of satisfaction, you know? And so that kind of plays into, I think too, if somebody was trying to figure out which way they want to go, I don't necessarily know that in home inspections, if you always get that sense of satisfaction, you know what I mean? Cause it's like, you're producing a product at the end of the day, that's a report and you send it out, and then that's kind of it. You know, you're kind of detached, or it's kind of this inanimate thing. You can't really touch it. You can't, you know what I mean? See it or feel it. So, you know, from that essence, it's kind of cold. So I guess I don't have a real definitive answer as to, you know, how anybody can make that decision. I think it's going to kind of be personal and really what drives you and what moves you and whether or not you think you can get to where you want to be, you know, in that field. So.
No, I think that's a great point with the sense of satisfaction in the physical product versus a report and kind of staying more hands off. I'm sure the lifestyle and the flexibility plays in and the money. So yeah, a lot of factors, definitely.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned hiring, so let's dive into that. That's a common theme. I get asked a lot. I hear a lot of inspectors struggling with it. You know, the one-man shops that are now getting to the point where you've gotten in the past. So what was that process like from the beginning, and what were some things you would do differently if you had to do it over again?
You know, from the beginning, I started out as a solo guy. And once I got to about 10 a week, I made the decision that I've got to get an assistant on board. we hired an assistant. Still with us today as an assistant role. We didn't actually want to be an inspector. So I think probably if I would have went back and could do anything over again, I would have found an assistant that wanted to become an inspector. So essentially, you'd kind of be, well, especially if you're a one-man shop and you're trying to get to a two-man or to grow from there, you know, hire the assistant that actually wants to be an inspector, because now you've killed two birds with one stone. One, he's helping you out in time and being able to grow your business and getting out of the field, you know, a little bit. And then also, you know, you're preparing for the future in being able to take the time that it's going to take to properly train that person. Hiring's a conundrum that you see a lot through a lot of the message boards online. And the biggest thing, I think, because I've hired from everything. I've hired millennial. I've hired 55-year-old semi-retiree. Mm-hmm. My last one here that's with us right now and training that's going to stick, it was ex-military. But the one thing, now he came in off the street, had no knowledge of inspections whatsoever, none. I mean, it would have been like you just going to McDonald's and grabbing the person in line in front of you and slapping a shirt and hat on him and saying, congratulations, here, or, you know, you're now a Spectora team member. But it's that way with him. But what he had was a strong work ethic. This is a guy I wanted to, you know, he's here 10 minutes before me at the office every day and you know what I mean? Wants to work. Yeah. And I think that's, from my experience, at least in hiring, that's the one trait that I think you can't teach that you have to have. I think everything else in this you can teach if you have the right amount of time goals set out for it. Mm-hmm. And for me, that time goal is a year at minimum. My other inspector was under me for a year, picked things up pretty quick and was out on his own in about a year. Probably could have been faster if I had an office. And that's probably the one thing I'm going to say to anybody that is in a position of growth, is I was running the business like most people were, out of their house. But I kind of had a third bedroom that was functioning as the office. But I also had a, you know, 2 or 3 year old. So it's kind of hard, you know, to bring the trainee back to your house in the third bedroom, and your 2 year old's running around, you know, smearing paint all over the walls and house is on fire and, you know, toilet paper everywhere. Unfortunately, Cameron succeeded despite me, because we didn't have a formal office. Now, I've since gone out, after that point in time, it was kind of painfully obvious to me I need a commercial space, and we went out and found it at a good price point, and now have an office set up to where, you know, at the end of the day, we can come back here and sit down and train and do the stuff, you know, that we need to do. And so I think that's kind of another component too that a lot of people overlook, is that, you know, the field training is great, but there's also stuff after the fact, and you've got to have a stable spot to be able to do that. And like I said, if you're like me and you got kids and you don't have the ability to do it, it kind of becomes tough. So that was the one thing that I changed quickly, that's, you know, definitely going to help in the future, is having an office to be able to do that training from. And then, like I said, it's just about the time expectations in this business. Whether, you know, if you find somebody that knows what they're doing, fantastic, kudos to you, pay them well and hold on to them. Otherwise, you know, all I can say is you're in this business, to me, you're in for a long haul of training to get into it. And there isn't anything necessarily wrong with that, because there can be downsides to having experienced people as well that are set in their ways with wanting to do things a certain way, and you trying to get them to adapt to the way you do things. You know, that can be a butting of heads as well. Whereas if you start with a clean slate, they're coming in and learning, you know, the way you have it done. So, you know, some things to think about there, you know, in how you do things.
Exactly. And I think the expectations of what you're going to get if you get a seasoned veteran versus a millennial is just being prepared for that mindset of what kind of crap are you going to deal with, you know, because there's going to be something with everybody.
Yeah.
Couple follow-up questions on this. So co-working spaces are big in lots of parts of the country. I don't know, are there lots of co-working spaces down there where you can get, you know, an office in a place with 20 others for cheap?
Yep. Oh yeah, we got them in St. Pete, we got them in Tampa, and they're opening up at bigger spaces, you know, at a pace too, and they're coming online here as well. You know, we have them existing, and there's more coming online, really high end ones. So yeah, that's obviously an option too if you don't have a need for a warehouse to store a whole lot of stuff, and you know, you just want to do a co-working type space as kind of a quiet, detached environment. That's definitely an option if that option exists where you're at, but those options don't always exist in every place in America. So
yeah. Talk to me a little bit about shadowing and infield training. That's probably something that doesn't get talked about as much. Like what are the challenges there when you're there trying to do your job while teaching someone else how to do your job? It doesn't seem like an easy thing. I've never done it, but I've been there when it's been happening, and it doesn't seem easy.
Well, the one thing that's helped us out is that the assistant that we have has been a long-term assistant, and he's been with us the whole time. So it's given, and his role as an assistant is to do the ancillary tasks that really aren't, I don't want to say that important, but aren't as, test the windows, doors, run sinks, tubs, showers, kitchen cabinets, lights, fans, outlets, all the carpet floors inside, all that stuff is taken care of by the assistant. So it kind of lets you focus on the major stuff. So while you're training, you're essentially only having to train on half of the house at a time. You know what I mean? So
right.
It hasn't really, I can see, you know, if you're a solo inspector and, you know, doing everything by yourself and you have a big house to inspect or something, and you're also trying to train at the same time. And you know, sometimes it's just, you just got to stack it up the right way. I mean, it can be done for sure. You know, it really depends on what software you're trying to train on and things like that, and your procedures and how you do things. And, but it can be done. Is sometimes I just have to take a back seat and just stand and watch and learn that way. And other times, you know, and then there's other times when you have enough time and you can let them lead and drive and correct them as they go and steer them and, you know, build them up towards being on their own. So it's just a build up from 0 to 60 and just understanding your time fluctuations and where you're at is really the biggest key to that, to getting them trained the right way. But yeah, I mean, it is challenging, especially I could see if you're solo. Lucky for me, it hasn't been an issue because we've had that flexibility with essentially half the inspection being accounted for pretty much at all times. You know, while I'm training, I know that half the inspection is already, you know, being taken care of. So that's helped for us, you know, and that could, like I went back saying before with, you know, hiring somebody that, you know, wants to be inserted, you'd always put them back to an assistant's role, you know, if you get to the point where you need to train, you know, for a day or two or whatever, and let them help you out. So it gives you some quasi flexibility, you know, from that end as you grow too.
Definitely. Can you teach agent and client interactions? Because I know it's an industry we're all trying to raise the professionalism of, and I think the better businessmen and the guy that people, the inspectors that are good with clients and agents can do well, you know, can do extremely well because of that interpersonal, you know, those interpersonal skills. So is that something you can teach in your opinion?
Well, I'll say this, everybody has their own personality. So everybody's going to have their own personality quirks. I would like to think, I mean, you know, if you've grown up, you've went to school, you've interacted with people your whole life. So I don't think what we do is greatly different than typical day-to-day interaction. So if you're a person that can't interact in life in general, then you're probably not going to be good at this job.
Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, from that standpoint, it's not really something I worry about, to be honest with you, because like I said, I inherently realize, you know, that's just, you're not going to, I mean, there's agents that my other inspector, Cameron, deals with that can't stand me personally. And it's just, you know, because it's just of who I am and the way my personality is, and they love him. And there's agents that are opposite, you know, likewise to there. So that's just human nature in and of itself. And that's just the way human nature is always going to be. So no, I don't really worry about that. I think if you can communicate what you need to communicate as it relates to our job, and what you owe the transaction in and of itself. And as long as you understand your role as what you are, is essentially a third party set of eyes to communicate what you can view of the property and its relative condition to them, and then leave, you know, take your money and go, and you know, and understand that role and live within it, then, you know, you'll probably succeed. And I think when you try to overstep that role is when, you know, there's potential issues, or when those issues, you know, arise.
You know, that's a great point. With so many new inspectors coming into the field, from my vantage point, talk to new inspectors from every walk of life. And, you know, you stated that understanding of what your place is in the transaction. It's just, some just don't have that understanding, and I don't know how they acquire it. But I think it's an underrated aspect of just knowing what the value you're providing and how to communicate it. And so that's a tough one, like the communication skills in general. Some have it and some don't.
Yeah. I mean, I always say we kind of work, you know, a lot of people say, well, we work for the buyers, we protect buyers. And I say, I don't really do that. I don't, my job isn't to protect or oversee anything. My job is to, you know, I'm hired to go out, document what I see about a condition of a house, move that information from one source. You know, this is essentially an information movement occupation. Now you're it's data movement from visual to product end. And that's what my job is, and turn that over to the client, and that's it. You know, and that's, you know, kind of how I view it, and how I always have viewed it. I think if you think otherwise, you know, there's nothing wrong with thinking that, but that's just kind of the way I've always felt about this. So I kind of turn it into, you know, I don't fall in love with a house. I don't hate a house. I've gone into the biggest dumps imaginable and watched people buy them, you know, and I've watched people walk away from beautiful houses over the most, what seems to me, you know, anybody else, to be the stupidest things. But it's not, you know, for me to say what somebody has in mind about how they want their, you know, property to be or anything like that. So it's, you know, my job is just this, and that's what we do, and that's it.
Love the mindset. We'll get into a little bit later your some of your keys to success, but I imagine that's one of them, is just having that kind of you know, stable mindset, and that guides your approach and how you talk to agents and clients. Something that new inspectors could definitely put some thought into, because it comes out in probably ways they don't even recognize. Shifting gears here, you know, the back half of 2018, real estate markets have been on fire pretty much everywhere for the last, what, 6 years, five, six, 7 years. What's your take on kind of the national market, national factors, as well as your local market?
Yeah. So you may not know this about me. I'm a Joe Rogan podcast maniac. So I'll go down the YouTube Joe Rogan podcast rabbit hole. Just about every night. But I find the one gentleman that he's had on there that I had never heard of for some weird reason. I don't really watch a lot of news, so that's probably why. But a gentleman called named Peter Schiff. He's a ex-businessman, basic economist, basic capitalist. I don't know if you're familiar with him. Yeah. Go on there. Yeah. I would probably strongly urge everybody to, he was on there, I think in July, and did about a 2 hour long podcast episode with Rogan. It's on YouTube, and kind of really brought some things to light to me. And it was stuff that I kind of already knew in a way. I mean, you know, we all know, you know, from being adults, markets go up, markets go down, the economy expands, the economy contracts, it doesn't, you know, constantly stay growing. And, you know, he just basically kind of broke it down and said, we've been in an expansionist economy now for about 8 years or so. And he said the longest basic expansion that, if you go back in the recorded history of the United States in terms of economy goes, the largest expansionist economy we've ever had is 9 years. That was literally the longest time that the economy has expanded from a contraction, you know what I mean? To that point. So, and, you know, I've kind of felt this way for a while, and he kind of reiterated it as well, that I think that we're in a real estate bubble. you know, I look at some of the prices. I look at the prices on the two houses that I'm going to build right now, and I'm flabbergasted at what I'm going to be asking for them. But not here nor there. Take the money and run. But I'm at the mindset now where the weird thing is that unlike the last time when real estate went crazy, that was essentially Wall Street taking the last remaining equity. You know, Wall Street took what they could out of the dot-com boom. They needed to find a new target. That was the American populace. And so they emptied America's equity in their homes by, you know, creating the whole mortgage casino gambling scheme that they created through, you know, Congress and, you know, manipulation and all that stuff. And so unlike that, I mean, right now you look at, you know, how hard it is to get a mortgage and the underwriting and the things you have to go through, and our demand is, you know, and the price increases and the things that we've seen were actually driven by kind of pure economics, but in a sense, our economy is still right now being boosted by the Fed just flooding, you know, the country with money. We're not, you know, producing things. We're still consuming cheap Chinese junk and sending them worthless treasury bonds, IOUs. So, you know, I'm kind of in the mindset of looking at things, and it's been like that for a long time, that the piper is going to be paid at some point. When that is, I'm not, you know, I don't have a crystal ball. Nobody does. But I'm kind of at the mindset now with everything where I'm taking as much money as I can out of anything. And, you know, I'm going to just start amassing it, because I think we're getting to the top of a run. I think nationally you're seeing at least news reports that, you know, home prices are starting to adjust. You know what I mean? Listings have undergone price decreases, you know, within the last 30 days. We're seeing more stories about that. Even here locally in this area. So I think the euphoric, just, we will just keep pushing, you know, LP per square foot up is kind of coming to a realization that affordability just can't sustain it anymore. So, I'm not all doom and gloom by any means, because I think, you know, like we built this out of a pure demand situation. So it's basic economics working the way it should, but, you know, at some point in time, affordability and everything else is going to, you know, do that. And then, you know, rising interest rates are going to, you know, affect that as well. So, I think the expansionist, you know, that we experienced the past few years, the economy that we've had, isn't possibly going to be so green, you know, in the next few years. Hopefully I'm wrong, but, you know, I'd love to be wrong. Exactly. You know, I'd love to be listening to this in 3 years from now and being like, wow, what an idiot, you know, can't believe I said that. So, but I'm not doom and gloom. I mean, there's nothing we can do about it. So you just kind of have to roll with the punches and live in the now. And you know, and just be smart with things and not get, you know, in over your head. So,
yeah,
but that's kind of where I think, that's where I think things are headed. I mean, you know, so we'll see where it goes. Be interesting.
What do you think experienced inspectors like yourself, businesses, you know, bigger or smaller than yours, can do in anticipation of that? What are some smart things that come to mind to say, hey, let's prepare for this, or insulate your business somehow, or solidify relationships with agents?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're kind of a weird business in and of itself, where, like, just on the basis of home inspections in and of itself, it's hard to, we're a one and done industry. So it's not like, you know, I see all these things from Homebinder and crap, annual maintenance inspections and this and that. I mean, nobody does that crap. You're just barking up the wrong tree to try and grow that in the business. Look, it's smart. I get it. But, you know, a recurring revenue business is the best business. I mean, that's pest control. That's air conditioning. You know, you go out as an AC company, you service somebody's AC, you get their contact info, you throw it into your software, and 6 months from now, you know, somebody's calling to set up another service call appointment for your 6 month or your annual or whatever, and you can build a churn book of at least minimal service business that way, you know, whereas we don't really have that feature. So we're kind of left with I really kind of think to insulate yourself from that, you've kind of really got to expand your product offering, and that be SoarCam, that be learn, get mold licensed if it's in your state, or, you know, learn how to do that if it's not licensed, radon, maybe really delve deep into infrared and that end of the business, and, you know, just try and get as many, you know, pool leak inspections. There's so many things you can kind of branch out in to kind of better insulate yourself from, because if your sole product is like, I just go out and do home inspections and the real estate market turns, you know what I mean? Like, if you're insulated with some mold revenue and radon and things like that, you can weather out those highs and lows with, you know, ancillary business. You can always slash staff, but, you know, you have to have something to be able to fall back on, you know, in case that number drops, where you can, you know, if you find yourself having some additional time, then, okay, I'm going to go out and market this product more heavily, you know, maybe go to all my plumbers and market, hey, I got a Mac Daddy sewer cam. If you guys have clogs and you don't have one, let me know, you know, here's my card that I bought, and drum, you know, beat the streets and drum business that way. So, you just kind of have to look outside your own little insulated world and, you know, kind of keep yourself braced for that.
No, it's great advice. I think that's expansion of services. I hear a bunch of guys looking into, to increase that average per transaction. But yeah, I think that's as best as you can get in this industry to insulating. I want to jump back to just kind of agent interactions. Have you ever done agent presentations? That's something that comes up a lot. You know, what do those look like for you, and what are the things that have been helpful?
Well, one is not being fearful of public speaking. For some reason, I've never had that phobia. So for me, I can get up, I'll do lunch and learns and walk in the office with nothing and just me in my head, and I can talk, you know, right off the cuff and do it no problem and keep them, you know, captivated for 30, 40 minutes and roll from there with interaction, things like that. Not everybody has that ability. So, I mean, there's people that have, you know, I have some PowerPoints or not PowerPoint, Google slide presentations of stuff I have, and you can come up with yourself. I made one up myself of repair addendum tips and tricks on how to properly write repair addendums. A lot of people don't know that that's a contractual part of the contract, and they write them up sloppily, and then, you know, because it's not communicating to a selling party what your buyer ultimately wants done. You say, I want blibbity blop done, and then seller just goes and does it themselves because you didn't say you wanted a licensed roofer to fix the roof, and they get up there and do it on a weekend. You know, it's about things like that, or you know, stuff like that, and that helps them do their job because it's stuff that their broker isn't going to teach them how to do, typically, and just little finding nuances maybe of education gaps that you see. You know, we'll do termite inspection, how to interpret the state termite forms. We'll do just about the inspection process in general, and you know, here in the state with 4 points and things like that. So there's lots of different things, you know, just rack your brain. And I mean, you can put a rudimentary Google slide presentation together, you know, on a Saturday afternoon in like an hour and a half, you know what I mean? And it doesn't have to be, people's attention spans are garbage now anyway. So you don't want to be making an hour long presentation, you know, stick to a 20 minute thing, or, you know, 15 to 20 minutes. And by the time you answer all the questions that are going to come up with what you supply them anyway, they're going to be there, you know, you're going to have 30, 40 minutes worth of material real quick.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be anything crazy.
10 slides max, we'll say, right? Like 10, 15 slides
I'd say 10. Yeah. I mean, that's about what I keep it at, and keep it simple, stupid. You know, and don't be technical with stuff. People, they don't, you know, they're salespeople. They deal with sales. Yeah. So, you know, dumb it down to their level so they can understand. Not dumb it down, but, you know, make it
layman's terms, agent terms.
Everybody, don't jargon it up, and you know, dress nice. Don't go in there with, you know, a pair of jeans on and t-shirt. You know, put on a put on a dress shirt, put on slacks, put on your dress shoes. If you don't have a suit, buy a suit, because these are professional business people. They're not us, you know. So as much as I'd love to just go in there with my jeans and my, mildly offensive t-shirt or something on, can't do that. Yep. So you got to, put the stupid tie on and the dress shirt and, make yourself look presentable. They'll respect that. So
You got to know your audience, right? I think that one gets missed a lot from what I hear when I talk to inspectors about agent presentations. I just get the sense they underestimate who their audience is and what their perceptions are of our industry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, nice. That's some really helpful stuff. I'm sure there's some inspectors out there that can take notes on that. What about some other keys to your business's growth? You're clearly hugely successful company and done very well. What are some of the things you attribute that to?
Well, we're not hugely successful. I appreciate the compliment. I mean, there's a ton more guys that are, bigger than me, better than me, that do it better than me by all means. We're not anything fancy, but we have done well. And we have, grown from nothing to at least something. The keys to success here, I think is one, you got to kind of know your market. This being Florida, we have an abundance of a few things. We have abundance of termites, we have an abundance of swimming pools, and we have an abundance of old freaking houses. So, knowing how to do swimming pool inspections in-house, was huge. I was self-taught the old school way, but there's schools that you can go to and learn it for $200 on a weekend and get your, CPO certification, new pool inspections. Store camera inspections, buying the store cameras gotten us a bunch of business. That has proven to be worth its weight with the older cast iron stuff we have, down here in Pinellas County. We were grown out in the 50s and 60s. So that was what they had. And the other thing here is termites. The state with Florida is highly regulated, so you have to work under a, I for the longest time, when it was just me solo, I subbed out all my termite inspections to a third party guy. So every transaction we had a termite, I was seeing $85 go into somebody else's pocket. And when that starts multiplying out to when you're starting out, maybe you're doing 8 or 10 a week, let's say you're doing 8 termite inspections a week and you're seeing, let's say, $90 going to somebody else's pocket, and you start realizing that's $550, man. And then multiply that over a month, that's $2,000. That's $24,000 freaking dollars. I mean, that's not a small chunk of change annualized. And I was like, why the hell am I, there's gotta be a way. So where there's a will, there's a way. I found a way, eventually went and got my, certified pest control operators through FDAC. So I'm now a CPO as well. So we can do our own treatments and everything else. We sell Dow Centricon as well. We got approved with them. So, expand your horizons and don't just stay within your box. The more things you can do in house, the more you become a commodity to the people that need you. So, if you have a pool and you know how to do pool inspections, that realtor or that buyer doesn't have to go searching the World Wide Web for a pool inspector. You know what I mean? They can get covered in one fell swoop. So one-stop shop was really what grew our business. And I think it grows a lot of companies' business like us over here in this area. The one-stop shops where people are doing things in-house. We have our own termite company now. We have, everything's done in-house. So it's just basically one call can set up just about anything they need, aside from a few things. But that really helps your credibility and helps you build. Probably the second thing, having a really good website has helped. That was the first thing that really helped me. And I'll give credit where credit's due. And when I first started out, I went to a Florida International convention and Dom from Home Inspector Pro was teaching a class on SEO there, and I'm gonna give credit where credit's due. He and I've told him this story. Great guy. stood up in front of the class and said, I'm going to teach you guys how to take a website from nothing to first page of Google, and none of you guys in this class are going to do it. And I thought, son of a bitch, like, who's this guy to stand up there and tell me that I'm not going to, you know what I mean? So I like took
the challenge accepted.
Took pages of notes on all this stuff. And as soon as I got back from that conference, boom, I just sat down for days and days and days and built, you know, learned the whole SEO thing on my own, because I was like, you're kind of in a pickle there. It's a situation where you either learn how to do your own web stuff and do it well and can alter stuff on the fly, or no offense to you guys, because I know you guys do website hosting and all that stuff, or you, what I like to say is you essentially become a slave to your web master and designer. So anytime you want to implement a change real quick on your website, you've got to email it in. And then, if it's somebody else other than you guys, it could be, hey, it's going to cost you $200 or whatever. It starts becoming a piggy bank, anytime you want to put a blog post up or this or that or anything else. So that was one of the good things for me, is that I really bucked down early on when it was learning time. And that was the first thing that I learned was SEO, how to alt tag your website, how to structure with your heading tags and things like that, and get it set up with Google Analytics to track back and things like that. So, and now everything is kind of map based, and kind of the organic results don't matter much anymore. So, when Google made that switch to maps, we made sure we had plenty of reviews and things like that to where, because now it's like all Thumbtack, Yelp, and all these other, damn websites are, paying Google to be listed first in city search, service terms, so they can sell the leads back to people. Whereas, right now, at least when you're on mobile or your computer, your map results are still first and foremost right below the ad fold. So as long as you have a good, Google Places for Business profile filled out, you can at least be capturing, some web traffic that way by having at least a strong map presence with, good reviews and things online.
Yeah. And your website impacts that. So that's, it all ties together. I think organic still, the organic links still matter. People still click on them, but you're right. Most markets, you got Yelp and Home Advisor holding down the top two spots. Some of our guys have beaten them out. But I think you're in the minority here of inspectors that will just go out and learn it and do it themselves. So kudos to you. We encourage all of our inspector users to learn this stuff. We'll give you the tools, go in and do it. But most won't. And it's a matter of time or money, I think. It's like, you want to spend your time,
yeah,
and you probably spent less time because you have some of that expertise, which is nice.
Well, and I had the time too. I mean, it was right, right when I was starting out. So kind of that's the one commodity you have early on, is you have that time, and that knowledge is free. That knowledge is online. I mean, you can go to YouTube and Wix, and plenty of places are going to teach you how to do it all. And it doesn't, it's really not that hard. So, I mean, if you have the time to do it, a lot of the problem is, it's the, you start getting established, and then it's like, oh, I want to do this. Yeah, I want to have this website. Well, now it becomes a matter of, is that time commodity there? No. So now, in essence, right. Yeah, it becomes a situation where you kind of have to almost pay somebody, because that time commodity is lost. It's no longer a commodity. It's fleeting.
So takeaway there for new inspectors, use the time wisely when you have it early on. Learn everything you can, be a sponge. I know I answer questions all the time, and hopefully, our guys are taken to that. Mm-hmm. One thing I've noticed about you, which is really cool, is that you're very active in our forum. You're such a great kind of, I guess, Spectora veteran. Talk a little bit about why you're so helpful. Some inspectors worry about the competitive aspect. Some don't want to help because they think, oh, it could be my competition someday. You just seem to kind of generally be helpful. What's your mentality on that?
I just don't care. what I mean by that is, like, I don't take myself seriously. I don't take the business seriously. Maybe that's a down. I don't want to say I don't take it seriously, but what I mean by that is, it doesn't matter to me. I mean, I kind of look at things more like Gary Vee, and this is capitalism 101. I mean, there's always going to be somebody coming along behind that's going to try to do better than you or not. So you can't just sit there in an isolated world and say, I'm not going to participate or I'm not going to help or I'm not going to be this or that, because, you know, it's not going to do any good. It's not going to affect anything one way or the other. So you might as well just get that out of your head and just play nice with everybody. I just, you know, we're all in this together. It's a capitalist economy. There's room for everybody here. There's room for the cheap guys, room for the expensive guys. There's room for the old guys. There's room for the young guys. There's knowledge that needs to be spread around and shared. And if it's in somebody's head and it's not out there for the betterment of all, then it's not doing anybody any good. But on a flip side of that, if you don't know what the hell you're saying, don't open your freaking mouth. Nothing comes out of my mouth or comes forward as an offering on any sort of forum or keyboard unless I know what I'm talking about. And if I don't know what I'm talking about, and when I say no, like meaning I've actually done it and have seen it and it's backed up by, you know, whatever facts, and it's not just something I've learned through this forum or secondhand hearsay, this or that or the other thing, then just don't say anything. It's not helping, you know, anybody whatsoever. So that's just kind of where my whole, you know, take on it is. And look, if anybody needs help, we've had guys come in here and shadow us just to see what it is we do, you know, how we do it. And, you know, I to this day, and there's guys that message me sometimes that have questions just about inspection. They just shoot me a Facebook message, tell you what am I looking at here? Okay, let me go. And I just answer it and go out on business. And whether they're in the same market or me or, you know, halfway across the country or whatever, I don't, you know, just part of who I am is, you know, no big deal, you know.
Yeah.
So
I'm a believer in karma. I'm a believer in putting good out there and it comes back to you. So I think I like that. And for what it's worth, we appreciate it. I don't know if we ever told you that, but we often reference you and a few others that kind of make our community what it is. And I think that's kind of the spirit of it. It's like, yeah, we're in this together. Let's learn from each other and make it better.
Yeah. The other thing I've learned too is, you know, this was from my corporate time, but I remember my boss at Travis, really good boss. And, you know, we dealt with a lot of the upper level CEOs there, like marketing managers and the chief financial officer, and would send them reports and stuff. And he always told me, like, whatever you do, whenever you send them something, type your email out, save it. Don't send it right away. Put it aside for 5 minutes, come back to it and reread it and see how, if you were somebody reading the other side of this, how it appears. And if, you know, you're actually communicating what it is you want to say in the right way. And I found that to be so, yeah, so much times I'll start to say something on whatever medium, you know, means of communication it is, whether it's whatever medium it would be, you know, Facebook, email, this or that or the other thing, text, whatever. And I let it sit and then I just put it aside. And, you know, how many times have I gone back and just been like, why am I even doing this? Click, or, you know, changing everything completely. Cause it's, you know what I mean? Like you get caught up in a moment of rash thought. And once you kind of put something out there, you can't take it back, unfortunately.
Right.
So I think it's kind of important. You always want to double check whether that's communication with a realtor, with a client, with a vendor, with you guys, with anybody, you know, just take, you know, put out what you want to say and just stop for a minute and then just put it aside, go do something else, come back, reread it, and you're going to find you're going to change it 90% of the time. You just are. And I do it all the time. So, but I think that's kind of helped me avoid situations, because I've found that, you know, once you actually sit down and reread and be like, oh geez, I can't believe I was going to send this like I need to reword this or something like that, it really helps all parties out in that situation. So
definitely some keyboard cowboys out there is the term I heard, where they forget that there's humans on the other side, or, you know, we've dehumanized, I think, interactions. And, you know, I see the forums sometimes and it gets me down when it's like, man, like if you were face to face, most of us wouldn't say these things, and if you did, it's unfortunate. So
yeah,
it's the nature of it.
Yep.
So I want to be respectful of your time. We got a couple minutes left. What are some some comments, you know, you do spend some time seeing what others write and post. What are some common mistakes you see new inspectors making out there?
Well, I mean, I can only comment really from what I see of newly licensed people coming in here, and that is just, again, kind of going full circle to maybe where we started on this, and that it's a difficult thing to learn, because it's not just like a trade where you're just learning plumbing or you're just learning AC. You've got to know roofing. You've got to know roofing problems, roofing mistakes. You got to know how things are installed. You got to know exterior. You got to know your bad siding products. You got to know your plumbing, your bad plumbing products. I mean, it runs the whole gamut from start to finish. And there's so much knowledge that you've got to absorb that's just not taught. I mean, it can't be taught. It just can't. Like, it just can't. There's just no way that you can take any amount of online classes and be prepared for what you're going to face. And I truly think that what kind of saddens me in a way is like I see a lot of these, like not saddens me, but like, I see a lot of, multi-inspector companies, do these like 5-year training agreements and non-competes and marketplace and all this stuff. And it may not be five, it may be whatever, but like this or that other thing. And I kind of, now granted, like I wouldn't want to have somebody come in here, shadow me for 10 months, get all the knowledge they can, I mean, leave and then go start their own business. Cause that to me feels kind of crappy. But on the same token, you know, it's kind of, I would want somebody to come in here and learn. And if in 3 years they become just a rock star, you know, and say, hey, you know what, you know, you're paying me pretty well, but I know in my heart, if I go out here, I can do this, you know, and succeed at it. And I'm going to branch out on my own. It would suck for me as a person, be like, yeah, well, you owe me, you know, $20,000 or like something, you know, and then take them to court or try to, you know, mess with that sort of mentality of them wanting to better their lives, better their family's lives, better their future, better their career. Like that to me, that's just me. I mean, I'm not saying it's right or wrong one way or the other, but to me, I think that just kind of sucks. But it's going back to your question. I mean, it's just all about knowledge. And to me, I couldn't imagine coming into this business just fresh out of like an online school or something and trying to navigate the waters and doing it. It just, to me, you know, like I said, I'm kind of the exception to the rule. I'm, you know, if anybody wants to talk to me about the way not to build a business, come talk to me, because I can tell you exactly the, you know, how many F-ups, you know, I've had along the way that, you know, like you just aren't going to get unless you do it yourself. And there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, I started at the bottom of the market when inspectors were fleeing, you know, were shuttering, you know, so many guys that I saw that were inspectors at the time aren't inspectors now because they left the business. And I've seen so many come in and couldn't get a stranglehold and leave that tried to do it themselves. I think it, where we're at in the market right now, that may not always be the best strategy. If you think you can do it, you can go for it, you know, go balls to the wall with it and, you know, do what you need to do. And I hope you make it. I think the biggest thing is it's not even as so much as the trade knowledge is where are you going to get your business from? I see, you know, I'm going to get my whole inspection, this and that and the other thing, and set up shop. I'm going to put my magnet on the side of my car and get my business cards from Vistaprint. I'm a home inspector. And how's the phone going to ring? You know, how are you going to make the phone ring? And without that plan, there's a huge disconnect. I don't care if you know everything under the sun. If that phone isn't going to ring to make money and you don't have a plan and an idea of how you're going to get business. And I mean, that was the one thing I actually did. You know, I had this like, okay, here's how I sat down. I was like, right now with where the market is and this and that, here's how I'm going to set about getting business, and I worked that plan, and that plan worked. But if you go into it without a plan, it's just like going on a cruise ship and jumping out in the middle of the ocean and being like, well, I hope I find an island. I hope there's an island out here somewhere. So, you're either going to sink or you swim. So it's probably not best to go that route. And, I know we're kind of up against time. And the only other thing I probably want to say as an industry as a whole is find your niche. And this is something I tell my guys, I tell people I know. When I first bought my first house in 2004, the gentleman that did my home inspection was an ex-contractor, didn't want to do construction anymore. So this was 2004, came out, was there probably about an hour, maybe an hour and a half. It wasn't a big house. It was like 1,400 square feet. It was there maybe an hour. Handed me a 10-page paper inspection form, which that was kind of still the norm back then. You know what I mean? You're kind of at that technology breakpoint where, it was the line was being drawn, and charged me $325 and no pictures, no nothing. And that was your inspection. And, probably a couple of weeks later, that inspection went in the trash. and then we had the software company, no offense, not me blaming you or anybody else, but they roll out these products where now we got digital pictures and there's library of 10,000 comments and we're churning out 80-page inspection reports. And now we start seeing, it starts to become, I heard Alan Carson talk at a power user conference a couple of years ago. And I don't know if anybody that's listening to this ever heard him talk. I don't know if it's on YouTube or not. If it is, I hope it is. If it's not, maybe I'll pester Nathan Thornberry to get that, if it was taped speech up there, but he kind of just, made a whole point, basically kind of covering what I kind of felt is that, I paid $325 for that home inspection. Home inspection prices haven't rose in 14 years. And you look at what that product was in 2004 with a 10 page form with just the major concerns about a property, and it's morphed into this thing where we're marking up missing doorstops and racking our brains for 3 hours, on a mean site. Now, great, it doesn't take me 3 hours. If I was 3 hours at a house, I'd be out of this business forever. But
right,
I guess, and then you start, these guys start advertising infrared thermography where we can come out and find dead rodents and termites and dangerous wires and see through your walls. No, I mean, it doesn't do any of that. And we add it on for free and it's, $300 and this and that. And it's like, to me, you kind of have to find your niche. What do you want to be? Are you going to be a home inspector that does home inspections, that finds the massive problems? And I kind of, as a business, got sucked into that early on where, we were churning out way too long reports of just stupid crap. And it got to the point where I started looking at this and I was like, why are we doing this? Like, after I heard that speech, I was like, and we just went in and murdered our inspection template and just got rid of so much stuff. Cause it just kind of like really sunk in with me. Like, why are we doing this? Because it became this expected norm. Like, as an inspector, we've done it to ourselves. And so, I think like if you want to be that inspector, then charge the money for that. If you're going to be at a small house for 3 hours, you're going to give them an 80-page report. That's ridiculous. That's great. You know what I mean? Like, that's great that you're going to go into that level of detail and find all that stuff, but then don't charge $300 that. Up that price, man. Like, that amount of like insanity to me should come with a price, and then so should everything else. Like, if you're going to pull out a $2,000 camera at somebody's house, I sure as hell am not going to be pulling that thing out for no extra money. You know what I mean? So, add on to your fee. I mean, there's going to be a market for it. You got to figure out what your market's going to be. I talked to a guy the other day on Facebook. He showed me his ISN average fee for his inspection. He does one a day. His average fee, now that's a bell curve, okay? So his bell curve middle was 5.25 down here. He does one a day. He goes out 10 o'clock. He's back home at 1 o'clock, and that's all he does. answers his own phone. And he does, you know, he's not doing 1,000, you know, things extra. Like, he's found his niche and he's making darn good money at it. You know what I mean? So I think there's a niche there that needs to be found. And I think, you know, I see our industry kind of, the expectations of what it is, of what we do, has kind of like gotten away from what I kind of think this business used to be. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You look at the old school guys, though, I'll tell you, I mean, they weren't, you know, they weren't giving you 80 pages of checklist report, you know, back in the day when it was just paper and stuff. I mean, this was about making sure the house wasn't money paid. Is your roof good? Are things working? And, you know, are you buying everything good? And it's just really kind of morphed 180 degrees. And to me, it's kind of concerning. And I, you know, I kind of have gone opposite of what most people do, is that I've retracted our inspections to the point where we're really only focused on those major things. I kind of try not to really focus on writing up a lot of just little minor stuff, wood rot or the doorknob won't latch, or, you know, just stupid stuff like that. That, to me, in the purchase of a house that's been in existence for 70 years, okay, the door won't latch. Well, it needs adjust. You know what I mean? But like, it's like become the norm that we include these things because, you know, our software tells us to, but no, you know what I mean? We've kind of created our own monster in a way. So that was kind of our driving force of going to Spectora, was because, you know, the PDF report started getting so cumbersome to maneuver through. And when I saw kind of what you guys had, it was so fresh and so different. I mean, I guess HomeGauge kind of had a similar, you know, web-based sort of display, and I probably didn't look into that as much as I could, but, you know, kind of what you guys had, and, you know, it's all cloud-based. I'm right now, my home inspection software is my last bastion of Windows-based anything. So my whole software, my whole business right now is run completely in the cloud. I have no Windows-based anything. So like, if I'm on vacation, I can run my whole business right from my cell phone, you know, including back, you know what I mean? Right. Like,
yeah,
software, yeah. Everything I have is completely based out of Chrome. I access it right from a Chrome tab, and that's it. But that was a nice feeling to have when I finally got rid of that Windows anchor, you know, that kind of drags you down. So, you know, kudos, I guess, you guys for that. So thank you.
You know, oh yeah, we appreciate that. And that's cool. And one of the benefits of cloud-based. You know, this last topic you bring up of kind of where the industry is at, we could probably do a whole nother talk on this. I think it's such a great thing to dissect and really dig into, because it's happening and most of us don't realize it. So we will tackle that another day, but I'm...
Yep. Yep. It's changing consumers' perceptions, I think, in a bad way, especially at a time when our sensitivity level seems to be at an all-time high. We've changed perception of what we do to also an all-time high, and it seems to like be counterbalancing, you know, expectations of what it is we do. And it's kind of weird because it, you know, when the foreclosure crisis was going on, this wasn't a problem. You know what I mean? Like, every house was, you go out to inspect, was a dump. It had 100 hornet's nests. The appliances were all out of it. Nothing worked. The roof was leaking, and people happily bought those houses hand over foot. You know, they couldn't wait to move into the house, you know, because they were buying the damn thing for, you know, $80,000. But nowadays it seems like, you know, I think as the prices have gone up, people's expectations and pickiness levels has gone up of what, you know, their expectations of things have been. And I think we as an industry have been too more than glad to kind of accommodate that, which is, you know, kind of concerning to me. And I'm not participating in it, but it's definitely causing undue stress, unfortunately, you know, and having to deal with the expectations on the back end, but that is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a huge factor, and I think it can drive a lot of people maybe out of the business. And so it's something that needs to be talked about more. So, we'll definitely get into it another time, but I'm glad you brought it up, at least to get it on people's radars of examining what they're offering, what they're charging. It's basics.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, let's figure out what you're going to do, figure out who you're going to be and where you're going to fit into this, you know, industry and niche, and there's room for everybody, you know, so figure out what your product's going to be and communicate what it is and, you know, sing it to the high hills and market yourself and do well.
Definitely. Definitely. All right. Well, hey, so for any inspectors or anyone listening that wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to find you? I'll link to your website in the description, but how can they get a hold of you?
Well, you type my name into Google, pretty easy to be found. So, nice. Best way, our websites, have, you know, direct, DM messages that come to us. So if you just go to, www.dgciflorida, that's dgciflorida.com, you can message us right there. I'm on Facebook. I'm not like Instagram or Twitter guy, so I don't have any of those. So you can reach out to me on there anytime. So don't call me.
Right on. Yep. I hear you. Well, Glenn, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate you taking the time out. I think you dropped a lot of knowledge and gems in here. So yeah, we'll be talking soon, and I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right.